Okay, good evening, everyone. This is Lou, and you're tuned to what we call 9 to 5, the program which explores employment opportunities for blind people by talking to and interviewing people who are currently employed in the working world. As you know, in the past, we've had people from all walks of life are doing different things, technology without technology. And the hope and prayer that I have is that one of these programs, because of one of the interviewees, will lead someone to believe that he can or she can carry out a successful job in one of these fields we've discussed. Tonight we have a guest who is Brian Johnson from Chicago. And because of technical difficulties in the past and even this evening, I am about as in the dark as any of you. So, Brian, you're going to have to help me discuss your life and what you're currently doing. Brian, would you tell us currently what you're doing at the moment to be gainfully employed?
Yes, I'm a voiceover. That means that I read commercials on television and radio, but you don't see me on the television. I'm just the voice over the commercial.
See, there are people who do that with singing, with reciting things, with making noises. You are the actual voice over for television and radio commercials. Is that correct?
Yes. I do, although there are lots of others, I do voices for television and radio commercials. Mostly lately, the commercials have gone over television.
Brian, do you have a company which markets your voice and your talents? Are you on, do you have an agent which arranges these jobs for you in the local Chicago TV and radio area?
No, I don't have an agent at the moment. I hope to have one of these days. I work for myself. I also got in. I might tell you that the way that I do my job is I can do it here at the house. I have some equipment that I can make a commercial here, or I can go somewhere else to do it. I use a cane. I use Braille. A lot of Braille. Without Braille and the ability to travel different places, not just one place every day, it would be hard for me to do the job that I do. And so not only do I get to read commercials and do things in the profession that I like to do, but I also get to use my blindness skills in different areas of the city and get to show sighted people by what I do that blind people can do anything really that they want to do outside of flying a plane and driving a cab.
Okay, Brian, that's helpful. Now, these commercials can be what, from 30 to 60 seconds? Are you a very fast Braille reader, or do you use an abbreviated form of Braille so you can zip through that verbiage?
Well, I should tell you that if anybody tries to read the copy that I read Braille pretty fast, and as a matter of fact, one of the main people that I do commercials for, which is a furniture store, wants to get all he can in 30 seconds. And so, therefore, if you have an 8x11 Braille page, it's probably a little over half of that page that I need to read in 30 seconds. So it's fun, and sometimes I can get it in there, and sometimes I can't, and sometimes it goes over 30 seconds by a second or two, and then I have to redo it. So, but usually by the fourth or fifth time I've completed it, and it works out well. I've been doing commercials for him for 10 years or so.
Brian, are you using any special technology, Braille Millennium or Braille Note or any of these tabletop Braille computers? I guess you could say, or a Braille display. Are you using anything like that, or you just use a slate and stylus and a regular Braille page?
Well, I use a slate and stylus and a regular Braille writer and regular Braille paper. Sometimes I've printed out the commercial on a Braille printer, but usually I don't. The problem with a lot of Braille displays is that they're not full-page displays, and so consequently you have to hit a button on the Braille display while the microphone is on, and sometimes that can cause problems.
Okay, that's helpful, Brian. What I wanted to ask you is when you're given a script, a commercial, a 60-second commercial, do you bring that home and read it on your scanner and your computer, or does someone read it to you? How do you manage that? I think I know, but I'd like you to describe that to us.
Well, it depends. If I'm, there are three ways. I can bring it home and put it on the scanner, read that way. If someone wants to email me a script, they can do that. And people call me and read me a script on the answering machine, and I go off the answering machine. When I'm out traveling and someone wants me unexpectedly, I can take the script on my slate and stylus and be there in an hour or so and then read the copy, which has happened before. So there are various ways that I can get the script. Also, my scanner will read faxes when I get my fax machine working. People will be able to fax me a script, too, if they want to do that. So there are various ways to do it. And a lot of times, a few years ago, when I was just starting to get into this, a lot of people who I would deal with say to me, well, how are you going to get your script? Because you walk into the place, and they hand you the script, and then, therefore, after they hand you the script, you're supposed to read it. Which I said, well, they are perfectly welcome to do that, and I'll write it out on my slate and stylus, and so they can hand me a script if they want to do that. But a lot of times, that's not the case. A lot of times they call me and just read the script on my answering machine, and then I come home and find out there's work to do.
Well, I'm glad you described that because it shows your adaptability, your resourcefulness, and I think that's always important to for low vision and no vision people to understand that you have to be resourceful. There's always a way of skinning that cat. Cats. Brian, how long have you been doing this?
Well, I started at the college radio station in 1972. I'm 47 years old. And I started doing the voiceovers in this market years ago. And it's a real risky business because the fact is I'm unemployed until the next job. So you're talking about this, you've said something about 9-to-5. This is not a 9-to-5 job, but it's fun. It's very enjoyable. And the advantage is that although it's risky, I don't have to retire until I want to. So if everything's intact with the pipes, as they say in the biz, I can do this into my 70s and 80s if I want to. By the way, I'm totally blind. I'm plumb blind. So if anyone asks me if I'm visually impaired, the answer is no. I have no vision to be impaired. I'm totally blind. I think that's important, especially when we're talking about it with blind people, because we can kind of get more intimate some with blind people in terms of how we do stuff, so that people will really understand that they really can go out and do whatever it is. A lot of times it's good for people to go back as a child and say, when you were a child, what did you want to do when you grow up. Because a lot of blind people, I think, have lost that dream by various kinds of life experiences, whether they're an agency for the blind that's told them that they just plain can't do whatever it is. I had a rehab counselor told me I just plain can't be in radio. And I was the program director of a radio station, and so he took back what he said a few years later. So I think really it's up to us to educate ourselves and to be in environments that say, look, you really can do this, and here's how you can.
Yeah, that's exactly what the whole point of this program is, to show people, the listening audience, how an individual like yourself does the work and has not been dissuaded by his, and I'm glad you used the word, blindness. Would you trace out your career from the from college? You said you're in college radio. Did you move on into commercial radio at that point? Could you go through that for us? Tell us something about that.
Well, when I was in college, I worked part-time at the radio station. This was in the small town of Charleston, Illinois, which is about a couple of hundred miles south of Chicago here. And then I went from there to working full-time in the radio station in the small town. And then I moved about an hour away to be a rehab counselor for about 4 years. And when I was in my 20s, I thought if I was going to be a rehab counselor, I could change everything, you know, and make it better for folks. Well, the problem is I didn't have any real power there to spend any money. I had to have that signed off by my supervisor. So, consequently, that didn't work out very well. And besides which, the reason I did it, and this is really what I mean by talking about being intimate with each other, the reason I did that was because I really didn't think that I could cut it in this market, and I really didn't think I could cut it being a voiceover or someone who is reading commercials. So I went off and did something else, and I was miserable. And I beg each and every one of you not to do that. I sold myself short, and it's easy to do in this society, and I hope that if we have, we can learn from each other and listen to each other so that we don't do it. Because the main fact really is take away our dream, whether it's the agency doing it or something else in society, is probably one of the most painful things we can experience. Now, the other side of that is, after that, I went and DJed in bars and stuff for a while and had a good time with that. And I got into this after a while there and really am enjoying life. I'm very happy, and not the kind of happy you have at Christmas time when you're a kid, but very balanced happy. And it's because I really am doing what I really want to do, and I'm getting feedback that I'm okay at it.
Well, I'm glad you made those comments. They are very, very important. I don't know who's got their mic on, but someone's doing some typing in the background. That isn't you, Brian, I know. Brian, so you went into the radio business. You were a success there. You went into the DJ business at night or in the afternoons. What kind of employment did you have after that? Did you finally get into the commercial field, reading commercials as a voiceover? How did that happen? How did you break into that?
Well, first of all, I took a couple of classes. If anyone listens to WLS, are familiar with that back in the 60s, you know a fellow by the name of Ray Van Steen, who played a character on WLS called Peter Fugitive. If some of you have listened to Chicago radio at night, and you're old enough to remember that back in the 60s when we had Ron Riley and Clark Weber and Art Roberts and people like that, well, I took a class from him. back in the 80s, and I spent a year in Colorado, moved to Colorado for a while and took a class out there, and then I came back here and gradually got into it. Now, it wasn't the class that really helped me get into it. What it was a friend of mine who I used to work with in one of the smaller radio stations worked here at the country station, and so I heard him on the radio one day 10 years ago and called him up, and I thought it was him, and he thought that was me, and sure enough, we found each other, and he gave me a lead of a television station that needed some voiceover work. And in June of 91, I went over and did my first voiceover spot, which was a spot for a pool table. One of those TV ads for a pool table that you can't buy in a store. And I'm sure the company is now defunct, but that was my first spot.
And that brought you the attention of other companies that wanted your voice in particular?
Yeah, and then I've done some spots for, I did a training video for the Chicago Transit Authority about accessibility for public transportation, and I've done a training video for a couple of them for one of the medical centers out in the suburbs. So with his contact, and then by making commercials, I then was able to make myself a demo of commercials that I have done. And I also did there was a convention here a few years ago, and I did an audio presentation about the city of Chicago, which worked out very well. My friend was on the production end of it and ran the controls, and I did the voiceover for it, and the audio worked out very well.
Now, you have a classic bass baritone voice like the old announcers in the 1930s and 40s. Do you have any special voice training, elocution training, or is this just a natural talent you had? Possess, I should say, you have it still.
Well, I appreciate that. When I was a kid, Bill Cosby used to do a thing called go-karts. And when he was talking down low, he'd say, "You've got to have baby coach wheels. Nothing else will work." So, you know, I used to imitate Bill Cosby doing the go-kart and the little kid running down the hill with a cup of water going, well, I liked that, and so I imitated Bill Cosby, and then I got myself a tape recorder when I was a little kid and liked to hear myself on the air. So then I got into voiceover class, and the training was to open your mouth and talk loud from your abdomen, not your throat. Now, this, I don't know if this audio will pick this up or not, but there's a difference between talking from your abdomen and talking from your throat like this. When you talk through your throat like this, you probably breathe through your chest and your throat. It sounds not real pleasant to listen to. But some people don't know how to talk, so they talk through their throat, and their throat tightens up. However, if you talk through your abdomen, and you have enough air coming out with your voice so that it strengthens, so that your voice carries, that's what they train you to do. They call it talk with a voice going 80 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. That's some of the, I'd forgotten about that training. It's been a while since I've had that, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because singers, whether they be rock singers or certainly opera singers or commercial singers, know how to breathe and sing, and they do it always from the diaphragm. And anyone who's had voice lessons will know that that's exactly what you described, speaking from the diaphragm, not from the throat. you do some of these commercials, when you've done some of these commercials, have you changed your voice? Have you? Has someone asked you, look, Brian, we don't want that bass tone. We want a slight accent. We want a higher pitch. We want a dialect. Can you do those things, too?
Well, a lot of times I stay away from imitations, but sometimes people want different things. In the training video, I talk sort of in my normal voice, but in one of these furniture commercials that I do, where he wants everything in 30 seconds, I have to talk like this, and it sounds like, this is American Furniture Liquidators. Hopefully they didn't blast you out of there. But sometimes I do that in my apartment, and I cannot do that past 10:30 at night. My neighbors will complain. So it does change. And I don't know if this will pick up or not. I have a demo that I might play, and I don't know if this audio will pick it up or not. And I thought maybe when you were ready, I would start it and see if you could hear it. And if it was garbled or something, we'd turn it off. But I have it whenever you're ready for it. I don't want to move the interview along. I want to go at your speed, but I just have it here whenever you're ready.
We'll do it just before we break for the question and answer period. Is that all right with you, Brian?
Sure. Fine. Anything you want.
Thank you. Now, that furniture store, it sounds like that's the hard sell approach, the voiceover with the hard sell. Come on down, you know. The chairs and couches are flying out of here. Don't miss it. That kind of thing. Are there other kind of approaches that you use with your voice? Say a real estate agent or a car dealership. I guess that'd be a hard sell too, wouldn't it?
Car dealers sometimes are. Yeah, you're right on the money with that furniture store. By the way, that's running in Minnesota, and it's running in Phoenix, and it's running here. But training videos, you just really talk in your normal voice. Evidently about stuff that I know absolutely nothing about. So I have to read the video beforehand. I did a training video for a medical center. There's all kinds of medical words in it. And I played it back the other day. And I'm thinking, my God, how did I pronounce all those words? I have no idea what I was talking about. Of course, nobody else knows that. We do now, because I said so here on here. But it really makes a difference in the tone of voice. And so when you do a video like that, you say, welcome to St. Joe Medical Center. We've prepared this video for you, and you talk like this. So change of voice is real important. And everybody can do that who has a voice. People just don't know it. There are a lot of nice voices out there, a lot of nice voices on this website.
Now, Brian, I just want you to comment on this. Anyone who watches TV to any extent, I don't watch a lot of it, but I can't help watching the commercials around news programs. I hear a lot of voices that don't sound like yours. They're not beautiful bass, baritone voices. They're normal voices. Does that mean that today the field of voiceover is open not only to the beautiful voice that you have, but to average voices?
Oh, sure. It depends on what kind of commercial somebody wants to put together. It's not always my kind of voice anymore. It could be this kind of voice, where the voice just doesn't go any lower than this. Or it could be this kind of voice. It just depends on kind of commercial somebody wants. We have a commercial that runs on the White Sox ball game broadcast that really sound like. Is there 18 or 20 or 21, but that's the kind of image they want to portray. So it's a wide open field. In other words, people are competing with everybody else now in the country.
Okay, Brian, have you ever done a commercial which had national exposure? And Would that, if you were seeking that kind of national exposure, would that mean you'd have to go to New York and link up there with the some of the advertising agencies in the New York City area?
I think I've had some of my spots on WGN Superstation, so I think that that might have gone national. No, it wouldn't have to go to New York. They make a lot of spots right here in Chicago. And
hello, late,
one of these,
oh,
one of these days I'll...
I'm listening.
Go ahead, Brian.
One of these days, hopefully that'll happen. Now, I should tell you that I'm not in the union yet. Union dues are $1,000 or $2,000 a year or something. And I have to think about whether I want to be in the union. Now, the union is AFTRA and SAG, the American Federation of Television Radio Artists. And there's another, the other initials I'm not thinking of right off the bat. But national exposure is a good thing, only if you get residuals out of it. I'm not real gung-ho about, oh, gosh, you know, I'll get on national and everybody will hear me and all that kind of thing. I just want to do a good job for the company that I'm speaking for. And I don't have a whole lot of ambition about having my name in lights and all that kind of thing. That's mostly Hollywood stuff, and I think people are comfortable with themselves. That's not needed anyway.
I wanted to ask you a question. It might be kind of a touchy question, but since you referred to it in passing, you say you're not a member of the two main unions in the radio and television field. Have you stayed out not only because of the cost of the dues, but because you can be more marketable if you don't work at scale or you work below scale?
Well, I'm not sure that's true, and that's a fine question, by the way. I don't regard it as touchy. I've gotten scale rates working out of the union. I think scale rate, last time I looked, was somewhere around $175 a spot. Might have gone up some. And, you know, I'm not even ruling out being in the union. I just haven't done it yet, haven't joined it yet. When you join the union, incidentally, I don't think you have to pay your dues right away. I think if you join the union, you get some union work and work up enough to pay your dues. So that is yet another adventure in my life that I'll maybe experience one day.
Well, you're a little young to think of retirement, but I was speaking to a person who had retired from radio, had been in radio 30 or 40 years, and he said the benefits that the unions gave him as a retiree, the medical benefits and some of the others were just magnificent. As I say, you're too young to think about that now, but... maybe as you advance in years, you might think about those retirement benefits and the health benefits. I'm not a member of the union.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm probably not too young to think about it. I believe that's right. I believe they do. They have wonderful benefits. One of the big radio stations here in town is non-union, which I thought would be, but they're not union. So I think it just depends. I certainly am not opposed to the union. Quite frankly, I haven't had any spots I don't think that would require me to join the union. So one of these days, hope will, onward and upward.
Well, this is kind of a silly question, Brian. It probably has no answer, but maybe there is an answer. If you had one commercial you haven't done but would like to do, what would it be and for whom would it be?
I would like to do commercial for Jewel Food Store. Jewel Food Store is a grocery store here in Chicago, and the guy that does that is a voiceover who's in his 70s. And the guy, you wouldn't know it. And the reason I like it is because he comes on the air and just talks to you like you're sitting in your living room. Eat the heat with Coke. 12 packs are $8. And, you know, is just a wonderful commercial. Fire up the grill, beef tenderloins, $3.99 a pound. It makes you just want to go right
up. Or the voice, raise it a little bit, a little reverb, please. Is that done?
Well, first of all, the thing that you cannot have in this business is an ego. You go in there and they tell you to raise or lower, you need to do that. They tell you to slow down or speed up, you need to do that. The second part is, the best friend a voiceover has is an engineer. So if they want reverb or echo in there, the guy working the control, if you're in the studio, does that, and that's according to whether the company you're doing voiceover for wants it or not. Commercials I've done here, they haven't said to me they want an echo, so we haven't done that yet. But that's about the way it goes. You need to be able to take direction and criticism and not take it personally, because it's just a business. In the way to make the commercial so that the company will like it is to do what you're told. So we don't say do what you're told, we say take direction, but it's the same thing.
Now, I wanted to explore one other area. Every performer, and I consider you a performer, I don't mean to demean you, but I think you are a performer. Every actor, every actress, apply for jobs, and many times they are rejected. Rejection, rejection, rejection. Not right for the part. You don't sound right. You don't look right. How have you coped with that? I'm sure you've encountered rejection both as a blind person and just as yourself. How have you dealt with that rejection?
Well, see, that's why you can't have an ego in this business. There was an agent who wouldn't give me an interview because I was blind. And I believe that is exactly why. Because the agency had all kinds of interviews and all kinds of auditions. But rejections are a dime a dozen. And, you know, I don't know if I want most things that I've applied for, because I'll be working all the time. It only takes a few. And the ones you get, I say after every rejection is that much closer to the job. And I suppose that's probably right. But it's real important to separate, for me at least, who I am and my worth. I don't want to get all religious on you, but I believe that God loves me in His sight, and that has nothing to do with how many times I'm rejected, or for that matter, how many times I'm hired. So, if I go out there and decide to be of service, that's really the key, and then rejections really don't make much difference. If I get real hungry, then it might, but other than that, they don't.
So if I understand you correctly, when you do get rejected for a job, you don't feel diminished. You feel, well, I just didn't work. It didn't work out. I'll try the next one. The only reason I raise the question, Brian, because many blind people who apply for jobs get rejected, and they get rejected, and they get rejected. And after a while, they say, oh, the hell with it. I'm not going to get a job. No one wants me. I'm blind. That's it. Forget it. And what you're saying is, you encounter that all the time in your business, and it doesn't diminish you. You don't get discouraged. You just keep plowing on, and you've had the success you've had because you've been determined, and you've been determined to succeed in this occupation.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that the two things you're talking about are different things. The voiceover stuff, the rejection in that is just that. But we as blind people, at least in my generation, have been conditioned to believe either by our families or by some of the state agencies or by society that we can't. So the blindness stuff really is more than a rejection. That is rejection of part of who we are and a rejection of our characteristic, or if you like. So that's why we have websites like this, I think. Because I think that really calls for some extra encouragement and an extra environment that says, look, the reason I was rejected as a blind person is the reason you were rejected as a blind person, and the reason I was is because I was there, and if you were there, you'd have been too. So that's why you have all this business of, oh, here, let me help you across the street, and oh, my God, you do so well, and all that stuff. I think the two, if you separate them out, are different things. But we have balances for both of those. That's why we have websites like this, so that we can get with each other and really anything we need that we can do whatever we want to as blind people. Blindness won't stop us, but misunderstanding by society may. So that's why we get together on these websites and talk about it.
That's exactly right. That's why we have this website is doing such a good job, and that's why I'm attempting to do it with this little show 9 to 5. And if you want a moment, if you are geared up, I'd like to hear that recording, and after that we'll go into a question period with the audience. If you want me to fill here for a while until you get geared up, let me know, and I'll keep filling. You know about that. I'll do the best I can. All right, then let it roll.
Well, now, let me know if this is distorted. I'm going to play part of it and turn it off, and you can tell me if it's distorted. Hold on just a moment.
All roads, railroads, and airways lead to Chicago.
Fine, let it roll.
I just know.
All roads, railroads, and airways lead to Chicago. Transportation hub of America, crossroads of the world, with one of the globe's busiest international airports. Roll your sleeves up, let's get down to business.
You get all that? I didn't think so.
Come on down and see for yourself.
Get some Chevrolet Geo, Chicagoland's new volume business.
Visit American Furniture Liquidators at 4425 Southwestern in Chicago or call 312-579-1233. You don't have to have a basement to play pool, because now you can play right in your own living room. Its unique shape fits into any size room and can be custom finished to match your decor. And it'll give kids and adults hours of entertainment. A complete brake job for all four wheels, just $79. We'll save you money on front-end service or any auto repairs. Service while you wait. We offer 100% financing with good or bad credit, and we can also consolidate your bill so you have one low payment. National research has proven that our approach works 3 times faster than others. The jobs are there, but you have to call. We're Midtown Petroleum, and for over 37 years, we've been servicing Chicago's fleets and manufacturing companies. Midtown Petroleum is pretty open. Friday West, from 30 miles of Lake Michigan shoreline, more than 20 of which is devoted to recreation, is Carl Sandburg's City of Big Shoulders. Within its boundaries, or immediately surrounding Chicago, are are located two of the nation's top 10 academic institutions, Northwestern University and the University of Chicago. Until the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, mass transit was primarily available to those who could climb onto and off of buses. The ADA was passed to expand that availability. We must realize that the ADA is a civil rights law, and that failure to comply with this law constitutes failure to acknowledge the public's civil right to access to public transportation.
I don't know how that came through.
It came through fine. It was an excellent potpourri of the work you do, and I think we all appreciate hearing that. By gosh, we never would have guessed you were blind. Thanks, Brian.
Well, thank you, Lou. If you wouldn't have guessed it, I'll tell you.
I know. But Brian, if I don't have an opportunity before we leave here, I want to say that I want to thank you for coming on, for being so honest, so direct, and being so inspirational. I don't mean that in a religious way, but it takes people like you to say what has to be said and to give others encouragement. You know, this program is all about information, knowledge, and encouragement. And you've given that, and you've given the information, too. If you wouldn't mind, a few minutes of questioning from the audience. Does anyone have a question for Brian? You can ask it now.
To make a comment, you're talking about blindness and how we let the public run over us. I took admonition from my mobility instructor this morning about letting my Sunday school class members walk me home. I think they're very much smart.
Your mobility instructor told you that you could run your Sunday school class and encourage you? That's good. Very good.
Who we have to reach are those kids. If we can change their attitude, maybe when they grow up, they won't be as dumb as some of the public. Sorry about that one. Does someone else have a question?
I do, Lou.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
And what's your favorite commercial you've ever done?
Oh, golly. You know what? I don't know if it's my favorite or not, but the one I remember finally is that spot about the pool room where it says, you don't have to have a basement to play pool, because that was my very first commercial that I did in this market. So I'll always remember that fondly, because, you know, I was real nervous, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, and da-da-da-da-da. But the funny part was, while I'm with you guys, that other people might not understand is there was no kind of whether I might get rejected on the grounds of blindness, because the gal that I was doing it for already knew I was blind. My friend already told her that, so there was none of that. So that was a real relief. So I guess that's why that one sticks out in my head.
But so what do you do for to keep yourself away from people if they have cold and flu season? Do you do anything special?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I get a cold about once a year. And on the demo, I had a cold when I was doing a spot for Midtown Petroleum, so it came out Midtown Petroleum instead of Midtown Petroleum. If you listen real close, it's in there. And sometimes people don't even recognize it. And so I've had real bad fevers and stuff and have done some spots. But I take vitamins every day, and I'm not the best. I don't eat most of the time, but I try to take vitamins and stay away from them. If somebody has a cold, I usually do try to stay away from them for obvious reasons. That's a fine question.
Do you do voice exercises to keep the tonal quality in line? I do think you'd make a heck of a Tony the Tiger.
Sometimes when I'm in the shower, I go, "Whoa!" You know, stuff. And I try not to do that a whole lot because my neighbors think I'm nuts. But that's what you need to do. You need to let all that out so that you can condition yourself that your throat doesn't need to tighten up and that you can really talk from your diaphragm, you know, down below your throat. So you open your mouth and let it out every once in a while. It feels pretty good. People think you're crazy, but that's all right.
Sir, how is someone like me who enjoys changing her voice and get into doing commercials at a very small local radio station?
Get yourself a tape recorder and have somebody read some copy to you out of a magazine and start reading that if you're a Braille reader. Any kind of copy you can get a hold of. Put it onto a tape and go down there to the radio station and sit down with them and play them the tape and see what you can do. If I can help you with that, let me know. If I can doctor it up some here, I'll be glad to see if I can help you with that, too, if you like.
Thank you, sir. By the way, this is my first time on a chat room. I just got hooked up today. How is my volume, the sound, tonal quality, that kind of thing?
Your volume is just fine. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Becky, and I have a guide dog named Baxter.
Okay, good. What state are you from, Becky?
I'm in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Well, very good. We just I just got back from Pennsylvania a few weeks ago, went through Pittsburgh and all through Pennsylvania, and had a nice train ride through Pennsylvania and really enjoyed myself.
Did someone else have a question for Brian?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Do you have like a manager or anything, or do you just kind of drum up your own business?
Well, right now I kind of drum up my own business. I'd like to have a manager. That'd be nice. But that's not yet, but hopefully I will one of these days. I hope to have a manager, an agent, so we'll see. But right now I'm just drumming up my own business.
Someone have a question for Brian.
I don't have a question, Lou, but I thought it was a great interview.
Thank you, Jan. You're a doll. Brian, I have a question for you. Maybe while I'm asking this and you're answering it, someone will come up with a new question. I knew a young woman who lived in Chicago. Her name was Maureen Young, and she did voiceover for commercials in the Chicago area and for national commercials, which aired on TV, network TV. She also did radio in Chicago, soap operas and other things like that. Did you ever hear that name, Maureen Young?
Absolutely. I know her. I haven't seen her for a long time. And isn't it wonderful that now we've progressed to the point that we're not the only ones anymore in various professions we want to go into? We used to think, gosh, you know, maybe I'm the only one in here, you know. But I'm not the only one. And as a matter of fact, there's some people I think who are more successful than me. I hope that won't be the case for long. But anyway, the more people that are in profession that I want to be in or you want to be in or anybody else does, means that blindness is not a factor. And that's a real good thing, I think. That's sort of evades from your question, but not really. The answer to the question, yes, I know her very well. I think she's in California now, as a matter of fact. I'm surprised she hasn't been on this site.
Yeah, exactly. She's a very dear friend of mine, and the last I heard, she was in California, and then she was working somewhere, I think, in Washington for one of the department stores, but an extremely talented person, both as a writer, as a singer, as a speaker, and a dramaticist as well. But I think she's had some health problems, Brian. Now, does anyone have another question for Brian while I stalled around with that?
It's not a commercial type question, but how can you get the general public to get beyond getting used to blindness when you have a mother that wants people to get used to blindness?
Well, now, before I elaborate on that, is your mother listening?
No.
All right. Well, look, it's tough. Let me tell you that when I was growing up, before my mother knew better, my mother said to me, it is more natural for a man to be walking down the street with his dog than it is carrying a cane. And, of course, when she said natural, she meant sighted. Now, that is not why I don't have a guide dog. I don't have a guide dog because I love dogs and I believe I'd spoil it and turn him into a pet, because I love them too much. I went to a church group the other day, and there was a dog in front of me, and I stopped to pet it, and consequently was late for the church meeting, didn't care. So I think if we try to change our part of the world by our behavior, at least in its how the public affects us, we're doing a good thing, and I think really the most important thing is education. And I really think the public just doesn't know any better. I really do. I think there's a lot of goodwill out there. There's some rotten apples, but I really think that for the most part there's real goodwill out there. And sometimes they'll come up and ask me questions, and I'm sure they have everybody else about blindness and about how we handle blindness. And, of course, we set the format. People don't know anything about blindness, and so when they come in contact with us, we're the ones that do. And we've set the format for it. So I don't know. My family still has they still want to take care of me some, and they still don't like it that I'm in the big city because they're from a small town. So I don't know the whole answer to that yet. I think there's only so much you can do sometimes with the family, but they love me and I love them, and there's some things that we just agree to disagree about and go on from there.
Does someone else have a question for Brian?
Brian, are you singing?
That broke up. Let me see if do I do any singing? No, not really. I don't know if you want me to do that or not. Sometimes I like to sing, but certainly not professionally, no.
Someone else have a question for Brian, either in his profession or about his life? This is the time to ask it.
Okay. The opposite of my first question there, Brian. What was your least favorite commercial and why?
Oh, my God. The least favorite commercial was a commercial for a thing called Dishwasher Alert. Which is a sign. It's a sign that you put on your dishwasher. The company's out of business now. And if you put the sign one way, it says clean. And if you turn it over, it says dirty. So apparently, I've never seen the product. But if you wash the dishes, then you're supposed to turn the sign over, it says clean. And then if they're dirty, you're supposed to turn the sign over, it says dirty if the dishwasher's in there. I don't really know how it works, but the cost of it was about $15, and it was a mail order. And that was that dumbest ad I've ever seen in my life, let alone done.
I can understand why they're out of business.
I got to hunt that up. I think I've got it around here somewhere. If I ever find it, I'll play it for you.
Oh, I want to hear that one. It's hilarious. Hey, did they make that guy in Braille?
Do what?
Did they make it in Braille, too?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that was just for sighted people. I think we were discriminated against on that one.
Who was smart enough to open the dishwasher and check?
You know, it took me a long time to get through that spot. I think it took me 15 or 20 takes because I couldn't help laughing. I'd laugh in the middle of it.
Brian, I have a question for you that I should have asked. Your answer, you just brought it to mind. Typically now, not extremes, how many takes does it take to do a commercial? How many times do you have to record it to get it the way the director wants it and the way you want it?
Oh, I don't know. I think 4 or 5. I was thinking about that the other day. With this exception, if I do 4 or 5 takes and the thing is a second or so over time, then I have to do it again, regardless of whether I read it perfectly or not. So when I'm here, you know, I have to take out all kinds of bloopers on the tape that I say on the tape, you know, before I send it to them. But answer is 4 or 5 is probably a good round figure, unless I'm doing something for a training video or something with a lot of pages in the script, and that's something else. But for a commercial, for a 30-second commercial or a 60-second commercial, probably 4 or 5 takes.
Now, this question is for the techies who might be listening. What kind of home recording equipment do you have at home? And have you branched out into recording with MP3 or CD-ROM or tape, or what are you doing now, and where are you going from here, technologically speaking?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I can open up and ask for some training on some things. I'll tell you what I have first. I have a Mackie mixer. It's a 24-channel mixer, a Marantz dual cassette deck. That's the commercial kind with an independent motors in them. I have a Sony audio cassette deck, 2 Marantz CD players, and a Shure microphone. And I have Audio HQ on my computer. I don't know how to use it. I wish I did. And I don't know how to do MP3s, and I wish I did. Because I think that would probably help in my in the technical end of things. But that's where I am now at the moment.
See, so you're not using a program called SoundForge or a 2-channel recording that they use on ACB radio?
No, maybe I should.
Okay. Does someone else have a question before we let Brian off into his commercial world? Well, if not, Brian, I want to thank you for coming on 9 to 5 and speaking with me. The detail you did, you spoke in detail, you spoke honestly, unpretentiously, honestly, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure the audience appreciated hearing your story and what you're doing as a successful blind person. And I wish you the best of luck, and I hope to hear you on national radio or national TV sometime soon. And Brian, if you'd like to leave the room at this point, to get something to eat or get something to drink, you're welcome. If you'd like to stay in the room and chat informally with the people here, you're welcome to do that. Whatever you feel like doing, it's all right with us. And I want to thank you again, sir, for being on with me and sharing your employment history, what you're doing and how you do it, and the inspiration I think you've transmitted to everyone. Thanks, Brian.
Lou, I want to thank you before the recording goes off. You're a great interviewer. I think you ought to put a demo together and send it to a radio station or two and come on there and be a talk show host.
Well, Brian, thank you for the compliment, but I've done all the talking I want to do for 34 years in a college classroom, and I think I've had enough of that. This is just fun now. And for free.
Well, it certainly is, and I want to thank you and thank everybody in the audience. I had a great time. And we always have water around the studio. I'm going to go get me a glass of water and stay in here for a while, and I might have talked too much, so I might sit back and let people chat. But I thank you. It was great fun, and let's do it again sometime.
Thank you.
Okay.